Actions are nonviolent.
Below Your Knees signals 8 p.m. Wednesday. Ah, not Wednesday. It's Thursday. I'm only one day behind, but that's better than 2 weeks behind. And time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. And it's only on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Edgerton, and along with the best team on radio, Greg Audell. Oh, let's not forget Floyd the Wonder Dog. I love that baby. Doctors Warren Holloman and Hank Rubichek, and our media maven, Tatiana Gago. We celebrate the power of story as each week tellers take us on journeys through windows of their souls and transport us to magical worlds before returning us safely to the present. And tonight, we celebrate the liar style of the tall tale. I have to confess that I have spent all day working liar into my vocabulary. As I grew up, liar was considered to be an insulting term, and we could only say fibber. And each time I started to type in liar in the script and think about it in practice, I could just see my parents rolling over in their graves. But here we are. It's the Liar Style Tall Tale. And why liar style? Because this is our annual Liar, Liar, Pants on Fire radio program to publicize the 31st annual Liars Contest to be held by our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. This will be happening at Houston Baptist University this Sunday, April 13th at 7 p.m. And let me tell you, doesn't lying on Baptist property give you a little thrill? Uh-huh. Yeah, it's one of those sick twists the Guild does so well. We'll talk more about the specifics, but let's get to the fun stuff. Samples of a few lies told by some incredible liars. No. Fibbing tellers, right? So I have here as my guest, Skip Skipworth. He is from Dallas, and he will be one of the contestants on Saturday. And this is for a very good reason. He's won the Houston Storytellers Guild Liars Contest 4 times. Skip isn't just a champion liar, but he's also a terrific public speaker, having won over 50 Toastmasters competitions. During his truthful part of the day, he works as an art director and graphic designer. He was a cartoonist for both his high school and college newspapers. He went to Amarillo College before moving on to Texas Tech, where he received his Bachelor of Fine Arts. And I'm going to take a wild guess that he left his funny paper mark on all those schools. In spring 2018, the American Folklore Studies program at Texas A&M invited him to give a lecture on tall tales and to read some of his stories. Skip told me earlier that his hobbies are painting and a compulsion to lie, for which he clearly has found a productive outlet that expresses this particular talent very well. Skip, first I want to say I know that you came to town early just to join us on our program. And I want to thank you so much for doing that. And I know our radio audience is going to be very thankful too by the end of the evening. Now, just tell me a little bit. Did your family call each other liars? years? I mean, you're from Texas. Was that allowed? I mean, how did you come into this?
Well, thank you for letting me be here. Yeah, liar was probably one of those words that you didn't use too often. Well, you were fibbers. You could stretch the truth. That's why I like that they call it tall tales, because then you can tell everyone that's what you do. But, I discovered early on, you know, I've got such a wild imagination that if I really wanted to, I could be a very good liar, which is why it's a good thing that I don't. But that's, you know, this is such an outlet for me for doing tall tales, because that lets me stretch the truth.
So these stories come from your imagination, or imagination built on experience, or?
Mostly just imagination.
Okay, I am so ready for this. I really want to hear this first story, and I understand it was inspired by Publishers Clearinghouse, which we have all aspired to winning that wonderful competition, and it's entitled, You Are Definitely a Winner. Let's get going. Tell us this first story.
All right. You are definitely a winner. That's what the headline read through the cellophane window. The official-looking envelope validated the genuineness of my Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes impending wealth. All my other mail fell to the floor. My heart pounded. I felt lightheaded. This must be how rich people feel. I'll have to get used to it. As my fortune-seeking fingers shredded the outer envelope standing between me and a gazillion dollars, colorful coupons spilled out like a team of skydivers. And in the center of the flock, I spied the letter detailing how wealthy I was about to become. I felt rich already. I pawed the air, but the transcript heralding my newfound fortune eluded me. The mischievous airmail crash-landed on the kitchen floor and slid toward the fridge. Oh, no, you don't! I dove like a shortstop on a line drive. My hands followed the letter beneath the icebox. I touched something, which pushed it further away. I panicked. What if I couldn't retrieve my letter? And died, poor and penniless, only inches from the entombment of my cornucopia. With my bare teeth, I ripped the plastic grill from beneath the door, and peering beneath, I saw the letter. I jammed both hands beneath the fridge again and again, each time scraping another layer of epidermis. But pain couldn't deter me. Easy Street was calling my name. I found bits of bygone dinners, an elbow of macaroni, a dried-up lima bean. I think that was a tater tot. I found the missing button to my bathrobe. And further I reached, until the refrigerator door pressed against my cheek, and I could just make out the word, Winner! My imminent prosperity drove me to new heights. I straightened a coat hanger and raked it all around until I snagged something, which had to be the letter. What else could it be? I yanked like I was rope-starting a lawnmower and was rewarded with a gurgling sound. Water pooled beneath a metal monolith perched atop my gold mine. Desperation demanded that I rescue that letter. Being wealthy is a lot harder than I thought. And then I remembered. The refrigerator rolls. I tugged and pulled, but that giant paperweight wouldn't budge. Maybe I should have cleaned beneath it more often, but never mind. Hindsight is for losers. And ready to be richer than the Donald, I tugged with all my might. The stoic appliance surrendered to my greater will, pitched forward, and pinned me against the countertop. The flour canister atop the fridge upended and landed on my head like a diving helmet. The room went black. This is no way to treat a winner. Glancing down, I saw daylight. I watched my dog brush past me. Rex, go get help! Tilting my head, I saw him lapping the water amidst the flour and the ladder. The ladder! Summoning all my strength, I shoved the fridge off of me with perhaps a little too much effort as it tipped over backwards. Boom! The icebox landed on its back. The cupboard rattled, a window shattered, and all the pantry shelves collapsed. A dust cloud filled the room. My back screamed, my fingers bled, and I felt a heart attack on my event horizon. But the path to my treasure, now cleared of all obstacles, is what sustained me. I am a winner. While I wrestled with the can on my head, I saw Rex dive through his doggy door, carrying my letter. Rex, bring back my money! I followed him through the doggy door, ripping the screen door right off its hinges. I stood up outside. With the door about my waist, I felt a cool breeze and noticed my trousers were around my ankles. I tried to pull my pants up, but couldn't reach around my screen door hula skirt. Blindfolded and hamstrung, and with my icebox antifreezing in the middle of the kitchen, I held on to that single ray of sunshine as my self-esteem fogged over. Someday, I'll look back on all this and laugh from the deck of my private yacht. But first, the letter. Rex hopped about and barked as I stumbled after him, trailing a white cloud from my flower helmet. Bam! His head went right through the top half of the screen door. He squirmed, trying to free himself. I gripped the door and leaned back to peek beneath the canister, and I could see that Rex still had my letter. I reached forward to grab it, which lowered my pooch to the ground. Well, his half of the door began running, dragging my half all around. I dug in my heels, leaned back, and hoisted my dog off of the ground. I would not be denied my fortune. Standing at an awkward angle, I spotted a pair of feet. Tilting further, I saw that it was my nosy neighbor. Why, Miss Watkins, Rex and I were just going for a walk. What can I do for you? She stared at the canister on my head. I must have sounded like I was standing in an empty oil drum.
The postman left this letter for you in my mailbox.
She spied the paper in Rex's mouth.
Well, for goodness sakes, she said,
removing the dog-eared document. And she looked at it.
Well, this letter has my name on it.
She dropped my letter on top of the door, and she turned and marched away, carrying her soggy, chewed-up letter like it contained the next plague. I stood in my driveway, staring at the letter Miss Watkins dropped upon my door. I pried the flour canister off of my head and threw it aside. I shoved Rex's noggin back down through the hole, and then I squeezed the door down around my feet and stepped through it. As I reinstalled my trousers, I heard another dish fall from the collapsed shelves in the kitchen. Dusting flour from my sleeves, I reached down and flipped the letter over. And there, through the window of the exact same envelope, was their message written in red, Mr. Skipworth, you are definitely a winner.
So you won?
Yeah, well, yes, I did.
What'd you win?
I won a small trophy, and and just the fun of winning, the fun of competing.
So I remember when my brother and I were starving students in college, we lived a few blocks from each other, and it was always a thing of, you know, can we get together enough money to pay for our tuition? You know, can we combine on some meals here and so on? And he calls me one day and he said, I have it all taken care of. I was filling out my publisher's clearinghouse entry form for the sweepstakes, and suddenly I heard little bells ringing, and I got this tingling feeling all over. We're going to be winners. Don't worry. Didn't come through.
Yeah, not for me either.
But it's always fun. And I love those times when you're the winner of all these coupons. You know, you're the fifth place winner, so you get all the coupons. So, Skip, we talked a little earlier, or at least I mentioned how my parents didn't even allow us to call somebody a liar because that was such an insult. You have to call them a fibber before you establish they're a liar. So how did you, also growing up in Texas, become a successful liar?
Well, it's interesting because I grew up as an artist, and I drew on everything, I painted on everything, I just enjoyed artwork. But then I was at an ad agency one time, and they'd created a Toastmasters club, and I went and joined that club and just had so much fun and got involved in public speaking. And then one time I heard that they were going to have a tall tales contest, and I said, I've got to get in on that. And I had so much fun, I've just been doing it ever since.
So you make up these stories on your own?
Pretty much. I've probably got maybe 30 or 40 different stories out there that are just a snippet here, a snippet there. And sometimes I hear something or I think of something, and I go home and I work on this a little bit, I work on that a little bit, and slowly develop them. And that's kind of how I get to where I've got all these different stories about just about everything.
That's wonderful. You have to keep this going. Now, Publishers Clearinghouse, I don't know if they're still sending out these Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes letters that make you feel like you're just on the absolute verge of a dream life. That used to be a common occurrence, and now I guess it's been taken over by the lottery. You craft your stories, though, from these common occurrences. So are all your stories related to something that you experienced?
Some of them are. Some of them I just make up. Like, for instance, I, looking at my stories, and I said, you know, you don't have a fishing story. Every good storyteller's got to have a fishing story. So I.
And you are from Texas.
I am from Texas.
I understand you're from West Texas, which is pretty dry, but still.
And I am a fisherman. So I decided I had to create one. But then some of them, they're just from things that happen. I've got a story about building Christmas tree forts when we were little kids, which, you know, that really happened. That was a big thing. Of course, I just had to take it and embellish it to go a little bit further.
So you added snow to a Texas.
I added snow
Christmas.
To
yeah,
it. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, Hank. So it's very exciting, Hank, I know, for us to have Skip here. I know you've heard him several times, and Skip, you have made added a special day to your trip here to come and be with us. But another storyteller is Donna Ingham, which I think actually both you, mm-hmm. Hank, and Skip know. Mm-hmm. And we have a story from her. She is another very talented teller of tall tales. She couldn't make it in person for the show this time, but because she's so remarkably skilled, we're going to listen to one of her stories that's been recorded. Hank, tell us a little about her and what we're going to hear.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mary. Donna is a former English professor. She's a Story Slam participant and a winner multiple times at the National Storytelling Festival and the Tejas Storytelling Association. She really is the real deal. She's one of those rare folks who actually earn a living telling stories. None of those around. And her repertoire is ridiculous, and her skills are really off the proverbial chart. She was kind enough to send a couple of CDs to fill in for her presence tonight. No real substitute, but she did send in a couple that are terrific. She has one CD that is about her boy, CY, and his sweet young thing of a wife. That's the name of the album. She constructs a story thread about her son, CY, and his work as a mechanical engineer. This is one story that I really think listeners are going to enjoy, especially if you're from Texas or you love football. It's called Tailgating Anyone. Tatiana?
So we're going to have Donna Ingham telling her story of tailgating. Which, of course, makes me think of course, I have Alzheimer's. I can't remember that musician's name. Always has the concerts and everybody tailgates. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. That guy. Margaritaville.
Oh.
You see, our son had the good fortune to marry into season tickets for all of the University of Texas home football games. And into an already established tailgating group, the Burnt Orange Fan Zone, or BOFZ. Now, gone are the days when family and friends got to the stadium early, parked the pickup or the station wagon at the stadium parking lot, let down the literal tailgate, and pulled out the picnic basket for a modest pregame meal of tuna fish sandwiches and grape knee-high or some adult beverage. Nowadays, tailgating, like all things Texan, has grown bigger and better. And there is, even among tailgaters, a certain spirit of competition. CY and Stephanie's BOFZ group aspired to win the coveted Bud Light Ultimate Tailgater, or BLUT, award. Therefore, they were glad to get CY because he has a mechanical engineering degree and a welder. So the work began. First, the vehicle. "What do you want?" says CY. "What are the specs?" "Bigger," they said. "Better," they said. "And burnt orange," they said. So, starting with a more or less burnt orange, oversized Winnebago with a hefty set of longhorns already mounted on the front, CY initially supervised the creation of a second-story deck on top of the bus and added to it a canopy roof with those burnt orange and white twinkly lights and cooling misters attached all around. He provided access to the upper deck with a spiral staircase welded onto the back of the RV. Big enough, he judged, and definitely high enough to attract attention. Inside the Winnebago, CY and his BOFZ designers renovated, redecorated, and refitted in ways intended to give the recreational vehicle, a whole new meaning. They created Bevo's Ballroom, complete with wood parquet floors for two-stepping, leather-covered bench seats on each side for lounging, four, yes, count them, four 100-inch flat-screen HD TVs for surround viewing, powered by a 30-kilowatt generator, and, of course, a full bar, anchored by several 33-gallon kegs of Shiner Bock, Shiner Blonde, and Lone Star, the national beer of Texas. Meanwhile, up on the roof, those hoping to curry favor with the Bud Light people would be downing cans of that brew, all the while remembering to keep Austin not only weird but green by efficiently recycling the cans. CY, you see, had cleverly engineered can disposal chutes out of PVC pipe attached to the railing around the upper deck and slanting down at just the right angle for gravitational force to pull any properly discarded can from the second story to the recycle bin at ground level. admirable work. But on to the cooker. It must be big. It must be bold. It must feed the multitudes. With a 20-foot flatbed trailer as a base, CY and his design team fashioned a smoker out of a 1,000-gallon propane tank, steam-cleaned and mounted on a base of cross-braced steel girders. It took a hydraulic lift to raise the 8-foot-wide lid torched out and hinged on one side of the tank. The grill inside was made from several of those heavy-duty sidewalk grates like the one Marilyn Monroe stood on when her skirt blew up. The smokestack was so tall it had to be hinged so the rig could get through the downtown underpasses. It was a big old cooker. For style points, the boffs workers attached a Texas flag to the top of the smokestack and sculpted a welded, stylized longhorn head to attach to the front of the cooker and a nicely curved longhorn tail to the back. They were ready to be judged. Almost. First, however, they had to get the rig across town from CY's shop to their reserved spot on the parking lot across from Darrell K. Royal Memorial Stadium. They hitched the trailer to the Winnebago, equipped themselves with the proper permits, and positioned accompanying vehicles front and back sporting wide load signs. They set off with the smokestack lowered and the Texas flag at half staff for the moment. The game day traffic had not yet picked up because it was still 12 hours before kickoff. Nevertheless, their progress was slow as they created several traffic jams along the way, vehicles finding it difficult to get around them, or some simply stopping in opposite lanes so their occupants could stare at the passing parade. Once parked in their spot on the UT campus, they fired up the grill, stoking it with a small forest worth of mesquite logs enhanced with just a hint of Texas pecan. They fired up the generator, plugged in the lights and the flat-screen TVs, pumped up the kegs, iced down the Bud Light, and let the party begin. By the time the wood had burned down to optimum grill-ready coals, they had the spicy rub on a side of beef and an apple in the mouth of the whole hog or none. Smoke, smoke, smoke that Texas meat, boys. For it is, after all, the food that is often the deciding factor for the Blutt Award. The Boff's crew knew from earlier reconnaissance that their chief competition and current holder of the Bud Light Ultimate Tailgater title was a converted school bus several parking spaces over. They sent out another scout. He brought back his report. Their rivals had gone vegetarian. They were at that very moment cooking portobello mushrooms and soy burgers. No, the Boff's faithful cried. Surely even in Austin the judges wouldn't be swayed by healthful eating concerns. Just in case, however, someone found a bag of pita chips and a container of organic salsa to put on the snack table. And they waited and basted the side of beef and the roasting pig with some vinegary Texas-style barbecue sauce. That resulted in a smoky, pleasantly pungent aroma that rose through the smokestack and filled the air over the whole parking lot, drawing the judges right past the healthfully correct school bus rivals and into the realm of pure Texas excess. Each judge took the proffered can of Bud Light, drained it, shot the empty can down the chute to the recycle bin, chased that first brew with a cup of Shiner Bock, chowed down on a slice of brisket and a chunk of pork, passed on the salsa and pita chips, and unanimously declared the burnt orange tailgaters the winners. So they would be, for the year hence, the Blutt Boffs, proving once again that there is no such thing as overdoing it in Texas.
I think I'm hungry. And I just ate. That was a delicious description of smoking of meat and definitely the Texas culture. We're going to go to station identification at this point. This is Mary Edgerton with Tatiana Gago on the boards, and you're enjoying Great Big Lies, told convincingly by our guest teller, Skip Skipworth, and Donna Ingham on So What's Your Story? Only on Houston's KPFT, 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. So first, I have to tell you that April just is a month of birthdays. Skip's birthday was last Tuesday. Happy birthday, Skip. And Tatiana's birthday is this coming Saturday. Happy birthday, Tatiana.
Thank you.
Hey. So, on storytelling, let's talk about what's going on in our very active storytelling community in Houston. Tatiana, take it away.
Yes, Mary. And in fact, Houston is more active in storytelling than most realize. It's really a storytelling hub. We had a lot to do with that since we were the first radio program in the state that focused entirely on storytelling. But let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it's a great place to learn, to craft, deliver, and appreciate all kinds of stories, and to do with the support of the nicest folks around. They meet, or I should say we meet, because Dr. Hank is a long-standing member and the current vice president, on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. As Mary said earlier, our Liar Liar Pants on Fire show tonight is celebrating the 31st Annual Guild Liar Contest, and it is going to be held this Saturday, April 13th. It will be held at the Houston Baptist University. Directions are easy and are given on the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. Parking signs will be all over the place. Eight spectacular tellers like Skip will be entertaining, be more entertaining than the law allows, and Dr. Hank will be the MC. For those of you who were there last year, you may remember that our very own Dr. Hank placed third in the contest. Seriously, this is the event to attend this Saturday. Now, we can't talk price on listener-sponsored Pacifica, but Hank taught me how to be sneaky and to say that the Liars Contest is so cheap that we'll probably owe you money. Let me state this with a word problem. As a word problem, members will pay a single-digit price, and non-members will pay the lowest double-digit number that exists in mathematics, and members will be 16 bits less. And while you're checking out the Guild's page, why not join? You can register online, and their membership is cheap too, and for free. Not to mention that we love it when you do this. You can go onto the radio program tab on the menu and enjoy So What's Your Story programs from the past, all of them since 2008, almost 500, so you better get started. And if you own a radio, that's not an excuse. That's not a problem. Just listen to us online. And oh, hey, speaking of radio, don't forget to tune in into KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston every Thursday at 8 p.m. to listen to So What's Your Story live. No radio, no problem. You can stream live on kpft.org, or better yet, a visual without a TV by watching us on Facebook Live. Now that we have you thinking about Facebook, visit us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page and share it with all of your friends. And we'd love it if you like us when you leave. So What's Your Story is also on YouTube. And when you think about it, we're all over the place. And remember our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of every month. But this month it will be April 16th, when the theme is Bamboozled. Stories about being tricked, finagled, deceived, duped, manipulated. The Moth and the So What's Your Story has lots in common, because every month both storytelling institutions will serve up dizzying stories and get you acquainted with Houston storytelling community. We also want to give a shout out to Tejas Storytelling Association, one of the largest statewide associations in the country. They have become one of our most loyal fans and tireless supporters. Thank you. And speaking of supporters and fans, we love our listeners, and we want you to share your story ideas and comments with any one of us on the team by dropping a note to story@kpft.org. Whoever you contact, we promise to get back to you. You got any more lies for us, Mary?
Oh, I definitely think so, Tatiana. But I do want to say that everything Tatiana just said was the truth. That middle station identification is totally truth. Hand to God. But now that we've done some truthing, I think it's some time for some lying again. So, Hank, I think Tatiana said that you are involved with the Houston Storytellers Guild Liars competition and that you have been a winner. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Mary, that was a couple of years ago, and I am involved with the Houston Storytellers Guild, always has been. And yeah, a couple of years ago, I placed third, but I think there were only three contestants. But nevertheless, nevertheless.
That's a lie.
That was a lot of fun. And I suppose now you're going to want me to tell that story.
You got it, babes.
Okay. Well, let's see. You know, when I was a kid, I was a severe stutterer, and I talk about that all the time because now that I'm a communication professor, the idea of being a stutterer at one time is pretty baffling. But in junior high and high school, I stuttered a lot. I never really said anything in class because by the time I'd get it out, it would be time for summer break, or my friends would laugh at me. Either way, it wouldn't be a real pretty picture. So I didn't say a whole lot in school. And more importantly, when I had jobs in school, it had to be the kind of job that didn't really require me to say a whole lot, right? So I had a hard time landing a job in high school, at least one that required me to use my voice. But I had this one job at a place called E.M. Smith. It was a men's clothing store in downtown Cleveland. I worked about 20 hours a week. I didn't have to say much because I was able to sell by constructing creative ways to get men to see the usefulness of the products I sold. And that was my strength. I was creative and I was darn good at it. For example, I used to take shirts out of a bag and carefully place ties on the collars to show men how much they would get use out of their purchases. I made a shirt and tie display. Never had to say a word, just pointed to them. At first, Danny Wolf, my boss, thought I was making a mess until he sold every shirt and tie in his shop. He ordered more, and they sold out, and so it went. My technique was, pardon the arrogance, flawless. But my true forte, my natural calling, was underwear. I don't recall how I first became interested, but who cares, right? But it always has been underrated, you know, underwear. We don't see it much, so men, they don't really think it matters. But that attitude sucked. And I'd like to think that I'm largely responsible for changing the way people think about underwear. I knew how to sell anything, but it was men's underwear that catapulted me to stardom. I was one of the few who, at the ripe old age of 17, knew the difference between carded and combed cotton, not to mention Supima, Egyptian, chambray, basket weave, brushed, chenille, crepe, canvas, percolate, pinpoint, Oxford, broadcloth, poplin, sateen, organic, and so much more. I even knew thread count. You see, we want underwear to be durable, to last more than a couple of seasons. Gentlemen, we want sturdy briefs and boxers that we can move in without having to worry about ripping seams. We want our underwear to keep our same shape that they had when we bought them, not stretch or shrink over time. We want things that fit the shape of our body, not distort our silhouette or restrict our movements. We don't want fabric that pills or fades or falters because corners were cut or pride wasn't taken. We want underwear to feel good on the skin so we can enjoy wearing them instead of taking them off as soon as we get home. Sorry, I get passionate when I think of underwear. And so I digress. Well, at the store, I would place underwear on mannequins, again demonstrating that my talent in showing and not speaking with a stutter was what we needed to focus on. And Danny Wolf, my boss, was ecstatic. He thought I was the best salesman he'd ever known. In fact, he wanted me to become his underwear buyer, traveling worldwide for the best sewn, loomed, and stitched underwear in the world. I was his underwear guy. Hank, he said, you were born with a brief in one hand and a boxer in the other, he said. No, I replied. I have sights set on bigger things. I was going to college, and I had visions of things greater than boxer briefs. And then the damnedest thing happened. Danny Wolf became incensed with my attitude, and he fired me. Look, I was in high school, so I wasn't in great despair, but I did need a job. I didn't have a lot going for me. I didn't have a whole lot of skills, but I knew that I could sell, anything. It was a bold statement, but I believed in myself, and I wanted to prove it. Well, you know, I was raised in a religious home, at least one that spoke positively about the Lord, and I believed it. And then it occurred to me, why not sell Bibles? I mean, I stuttered, and no one was going to hire me, so I needed a plan. I finagled my way into an interview at Billy Best's Bible Barn outside of Cleveland, Ohio, and Billy sold discount Bibles for the less fortunate. He warned me that even those with less cash would be a hard sell because despite being believers, money for Bibles don't come easy, especially in 1968. But like I said, I had a plan. Billy encouraged me, telling me that my limitation, I knew he meant my speech disability, might not lead to great success, but I stayed with it. So when I returned after the first day at work and documented that I sold every one of the 25 Bibles that I had on my person, he was stunned. I knew that he was too embarrassed, but didn't want to bring attention to my, disorder. So he opted not to probe and ask how I could possibly sell these Bibles with a severe stuttering. But you know what? I'll tell you how I did it. I would take a Bible and I'd walk up to a door and I'd knock on it or ring the bell. And when the person came to the door, I said, "Hi, this Bible has 42 pages. You want to buy it, or you want me to read it to you?" Well, as you might imagine, everybody bought the damn thing, and man, I was really proud of myself. So you see, even with my limitation, I knew how to go around it. Damn innovative, wouldn't you say? Well, the rest is history. I overcame my stuttering. I went to college, grad school, earned a PhD, and check this out, communication. Became a communication professor. I'm as convinced today as I was in the 1960s that success has nothing to do with what you can say, how others evaluate your speech, or whether you have some sort of obstacle that might get in the way. It's about heart. It's about believing in yourself. It's about knowing your subject better than anyone else on the planet. But the real secret? It's about enjoying the pleasure of natural fabrication so you can focus on the task at hand. Cotton is indeed the fabric of our lives.
Hank, I want to believe that story. I want you to tell me that it's really true. Or some parts of it, at least.
Well, you know, this is an important thing, and Skip will agree with this, I'm sure, and Donna will. The interesting things about this Liars Contest, and on a serious note, this is a really tough kind of a story to tell, because there has to be a seed of truth. You've got to start with something. And one of the things that professional liars do, in the literal sense of the word in this kind of competition, is to make the story somewhat plausible. So you got to listen to the story and just say, you know what? That is nonsense. That's a tall tale. But how tall is it? Skip, would you agree? That's what it is. It's a little bit of truth, a little seed of truth. Skip, did you faint? Where is it?
I agree.
Good. Thank God. You know, you get him to say something that isn't funny, that isn't a tall tale. He doesn't know what to do.
Okay, guys. In a moment, I'm going to come back to both of you to ask you a little bit more about the contest and the requirements for judging. But just now, while we still have Skip in town, how about another story? Your next one is called Alien Abduction. Oh, so appeals to me. I had a mother who just so wanted it. She would tell us, "I love you, but if the alien ship came down, I have to go." And so I'm serious again while I say, since alien abduction is your story, let's hear it while you're still on the planet Earth. So, but can you tell us just a little bit what inspired this story?
You know, you grow up, you're hearing alien abduction stories from different people and how, you know, science experiments and stuff. So I just thought, you know, well, maybe I'd like to do an alien abduction, but put my own spin on it and maybe go where no one's gone before.
Oh, yes. And we know all about the Marfa Lights. All right. Let's get going. Let's hear that story.
A fracas beyond the bedroom door shattered my blissful slumber. Furniture toppled over somewhere in the house. Vesuvius, my cat, and the likely culprit, could go from quiet to riot with little provocation. What captivated her mischievous nature this time? A June bug? A moth? As I reached for the bedside table lamp, my door burst open. A wrestling match ensued somewhere below the horizon of my bedspread. Vesuvius growled and hissed as my end table and its contents vanished into the fray like branches into a wood chipper. The blanket stand in the corner was next, followed by everything on top of the dresser. About the time I pinpointed the ruckus in the darkness, the altercation relocated atop the foot of my bed. I sat up, poised to end this foolishness with a swipe of my pillow. But I froze in place. With a ringside seat atop my mattress, I noticed the object of my cat's wrath was about her size. Now, the disparity of this observation was gargantuanly minuscule compared to the realization that he was green from head to toe. What the? Before my mind could process this bizarre revelation, the two of them dropped to the floor again, still locked in combat. I threw back the covers as the two of them tumbled down the hallway. I leapt for my bed and gave chase while they roared through the kitchen like a freight train. Pots and pans clanged and fell to the floor, followed by the crash of dishes. I banked left into the kitchen in time to see the back door rip from its hinges and vanish into the backyard. I ran out onto the kitchen porch and watched the two combatants churn up the grass. Suddenly, the green intruder rocketed skywards into the night with my cat in tow. I heard Vesuvius cry, trail off into the moonlight above. Mew! Turning back towards the house, I perused the mess left behind. Someone or something had yanked up every square foot of carpet from each room. Every chair in the house was missing. From the kitchen windowsill, my Chia Pet had vanished. Also AWOL was my car, a half gallon of chocolate ice cream, and a box of Captain Crunch cereal. Wading through the facts, I arrived at a conclusion. Little green men had stolen everything whose name began with a C. It wasn't hard to deduce. This wasn't the first time. I shouted, "Darn their little hides," or words of similar meaning. "They're shoplifting the whole wide world, alphabetically. Yesterday, they burgled my bongo drums and my barca lounger. Gone from the earth were basketballs, beavers, and bowling balls, blenders, baklava, bicycles, and Burger King. And the day before that, everything that started with an A, from aardvarks to artichokes, alley cats to alligators. They boosted the entire continent of Australia. And when it all starts up again, they'll heist everything that begins with a D. Now, taking my cat was a big mistake. I'd had enough of these alien abductions. It was time to put a stop to this larceny, and I had a plan. Launching phase one of my scheme, I borrowed my neighbor's diaper pail and painted a big red D on the lid while trying not to inhale. And that evening, I snuck that stink bomb out on the front lawn and then hid out of sight all night. About an hour before dawn, a flying saucer came snooping about and sat down in my front yard. A dozen little green men scampered out. I watched one of them forage around, flicking his tongue like a lizard. And the end of his tongue resembled a small wiggly caterpillar. The avocado-colored spaceman found the diaper pail in my front yard, and with the help of a fellow Martian, the two of them hauled the prize aboard their ship. Others showed up, carrying a dachshund, a diving board, a dishwasher, and a lawnmower dipstick. They seemed somewhat pleased with their bounty as they exchanged high threes and then climbed aboard their spacecraft and blasted off. I watched the saucer streak through the sunrise. And suddenly, the little white dot that had become in the sky stuttered to a standstill. The spaceship curved around and headed back. The vessel wobbled and bobbled as it lumbered toward my front yard, where it ran aground with a kerplunkity-plunk-plunk. The spaceship didn't even come to a full stop before hatches popped open all over the craft. Little green men poured out as if their spaceship was a stepped-on anthill. Gagging and coughing like a bunch of munchkins, they stumbled about my yard. Someone had apparently opened that diaper pail, no doubt expecting great dividends. As they waited for their spaceship to air out, phase two of my plan unfolded. Since they sought treasures that started with the letter D, I introduced them to my Doberman. I said, "Guys, meet Daphne." Now, Daphne introduced them to Dogbite, as she scattered the entire herd of little green men. Meanwhile, I made holes in their saucer with my cordless drill. I attached a steel cable about 3 inches thick, and the other end I wound around a huge dogwood tree. The aliens ran double time, my dog hot on their heels, as they dove aboard their spaceship, minus one diaper pail. Their flying saucer roared to life and aimed towards the sky. For reasons not apparent to the little den of thieves, their spacecraft wouldn't budge. It hemmed and hawed and spewed and sputtered. The ground shook. The huge tree vibrated and leaves fell from the sky. The spaceship pilot poured on the gas. Exhaust pipes glowed red hot. The tree uprooted with a shloop, and the flying saucer flung across the sky. Skidding through the stratosphere, they left the earth, towing a really big tree. "Well, I guess we showed them, huh, Daphne?" I boasted as my pooch wagged her nub of a tail. Then something quickly blotted out the sun as it came over the horizon. My lip quivered while I beheld the arrival of the mothership. Maybe I overplayed my vigilante scheme. Perhaps sicking my dog on those aliens carried things a wee bit beyond tolerable. Was this the end? Was I destined to end up on a shelf in a jar? The immense spaceship dwarfed my neighborhood as it lowered a huge gangplank, and thousands of little green men came spilling out. I couldn't believe my eyes. The aliens were covered head to toe in bandages. Their beat-up-looking leader never uttered a word as he pointed back towards the spaceship and waved me aboard. All the little disheveled spacemen joined in, thousands of them, motioning me forward. I walked trepidatiously up the ramp, and once I reached the top, I peered inside, down a long, low hallway. Hunkered over, I inched slowly forward until I saw movement at the other end. It was Vesuvius, waving her tail. As I drew closer, I saw that she'd gained some weight. About 100 pounds. She was so fat she couldn't stand. "What on earth have they been feeding you?" I pondered as I scooped her up in my arms. Her tummy growled as I carried her back down the ramp and out of the mother ship. All the little green men scampered back up aboard, and without a sound, and the huge spaceship quickly departed for galaxies unknown. Now it occurred to me, as I watched them fly away, why No one had spoken a word, not even a peep. As the spacecraft hurtled skyward towards the morning sun, I shouted, "Hey, what's the matter? Did the cat get your tongues?"
I know that cat scratch thing because I have a fatal attraction relationship with my cat. And I wake up and say, "What are these new red marks on my face?" Where she pulls me too, here and there. Gosh, it's been wonderful listening to you tell these stories, and we're getting close to the end of our hour, closer than I thought we'd be. Storytelling fans in Radioland, be there or be square, and I am talking about the 31st Annual Liars Contest, sponsored by the Houston Storytellers Guild, this Saturday, April 13th, Tatiana's birthday. It will be held at Houston Baptist University, fertile ground for liars to meet. The directions are easy and are given on the Guild's website at houstonstorytellers.org. So, real quick, in just about 1 minute, Hank, you'll be the MC. Skip, you'll be a contestant. Do you just want to say one thing about the contest, what you're excited about?
Well, for
we
me,
want
I'm
people there. It'll be
eating.
Terrific. Yeah. You know, you want to take the exit off of Fondren on 59, and the signs will be there. I mean, I gave Custer his directions, and I can find it, so everybody else can too.
Are you talking about Custer's Last Stand? Mm-hmm. And Skip, you want to say something about it?
Well, I just said that I'm excited about being there because I know we had the floods last year, and that Houston went through all of that turmoil. And so I'm just glad to see everybody back up and going again. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, it's hard to believe. So thank you, Skip Skipworth and Donna Ingham. Skip, good luck. Going to be there rooting for you. You're such an excellent liar. I can't imagine anyone coming close. I do love the alien story. I have cats. So, don't you dare move, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson tapes. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary E., and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Noah built the ark, and I crawled in the window after dark. I saw Jonah eat the whale and dance with the lion's tail, and I crossed over Canaan on a log. Yeah, I was born about 10,000 years ago. Ain't nothing in this world that I don't know. I saw Pharaoh's daughter bring Moses from the water.
If you decided to donate your birthday to KPFT this year, thank you. If your special day hasn't yet arrived, consider donating your birthday to KPFT. Here's how it works. Facebook sends you a prompt before your birthday asking if you'd like to donate your birthday to a nonprofit. Select KPFT as your organization of choice. Then add a personalized message so that your friends know how much KPFT means to you. On your birthday, they'll receive a Facebook notification asking them to make a donation in your honor to KPFT. Thanks again for supporting 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio for Peace.
Where freedom rings and singers sing. Where Robert Earl Keen meets Martin Luther King. From jazz, justice, peace and rap. R&B, sports, blues and comedy. From heavy metal standing hand in hand with our chants. We shall not be silenced by fearmongers and sycophants. The place where your neighbor is on your airwaves. A true community. celebrating diversity in thought, music, and love, where your stories are told in unison. The most loving words that we can say, and we say it so bold. This is 90.